This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
It's strange when a suspect's college homework becomes part of the evidence file. And in the case of Brian Koberger, accused of murdering four University of Idaho students, prosecutors have now submitted a 12-page essay that he wrote in 2020 as part of his criminal justice coursework. It's called Crime Scene Scenario Final. And it's interesting. Some are saying it reads like a how-to guide for processing a crime scene and how to get away with it. Some might say avoiding detection at a murder scene. It's detailed. It's clinical. It's somewhat aligned with what actually happened in real life, allegedly, with him. And if you believe the state's version of events. But where it gets even more layered, and this wasn't just an this maybe just wasn't an academic assignment. Maybe it's part of a broader pattern. Maybe on the surface, yes, it looks like that, but maybe it was kind of a guide, kind of a study for him to see how to handle going into a situation like this, if in fact it is him. Joining us to kind of decipher some of this, Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author. When you see someone who's academically immersed in violent behavior, allegedly, writing about how not to leave a trace at a murder scene, it's that fine line, especially this was done in 2020, to tell the difference between curious student and psychologically dangerous individual. At 2020 when he wrote this, not today, now that we have all the other context, at 2020 when he wrote this, is this the writings of a dangerous individual then?
You know, we can't read too much into that assignment because it's probably an assignment that everyone in that class did, and everyone that got a good grade pretty much wrote the same stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, going over the paper, it was well done. It was, as you say, clinical. It was factual. And that's exactly what the instructor would have expected, because you want people who work in law enforcement to understand this stuff, to understand how to preserve a crime scene. So I don't think from that one assignment we can read anything significant into it, other than he did a good job. You know, he mm-hmm. studied, he was a smart guy. But would this have anything to do with his later behavior? Not in and of itself, but we do know that there's a small percentage of people who are drawn to forensics and criminology and police work because they have this psychopathic streak, this need sometimes to have power over other people, or because they really want to commit violent crimes and they feel like this gives them the opportunity to become a better criminal. So when we put it all in mm-hmm. the big picture, I can see why it's alarming to people.
And that's the interesting thing, because it seems like sometimes it can be a fine line there between you're using your skills, I'll call it that, for good or evil. I guess a skill, I would say it something of this nature, maybe empathetically kind of empty, something where you can more scientifically look at the material, more mechanically look at the material and keep emotion out of it. Would be helpful if you're a murderer. It would also be helpful if you're an investigator as well, to be yeah. able to really dig down and do that sort of thing. And the red flag here, I guess, or the fine line is, you know, if it's Koberger, when did he cross that? And was this a line that he'd already crossed back then, starting to think about
yeah.
these fantasies of maybe not yeah. have the exact people down of who he's going to go after, but having that rage, if it was him, that, okay, I'm gonna really study about this mechanically. So the rage is over here, but I need to know how to execute this. And he certainly, you know, he talked about everything you need to do to not get caught. Mm-hmm, and there, he didn't, if it was him, he didn't leave a whole lot behind.
Yeah, he did a fairly good job, other than the knife sheath.
Other than right? the obvious, yes.
Without that,
yeah.
there would be nothing on him. So it's interesting, that emotional disconnect. It's the same in a lot of professions. I think even when you look at doctors or surgeons, you know, when somebody's doing a hip replacement on grandma, they're looking at the technical aspects of it and aligning the bones and the muscles and doing their best job. They're not thinking about, oh, and this is someone's grandma. You know, they're disconnected from the emotion. So I think looking at where he was at developmentally, he would have been pondering a violent crime against women probably for many years, probably going at least into early to mid adolescence. So when we look at, was this something, a path he was already on cognitively? Yeah. Before, and that could have, as I said, could have driven him to want to study criminology.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you about that. If he was on this path, you know, obviously we're just talking, it's conjecture, it's allegations, he's innocent until proven guilty. But if we're talking that he was likely on this path from in adolescence, of course we have the writings where he talks about not being able to feel emotion and things of that nature on a message board, if that's him. And then you have this character that seems to be playing out exactly that from the recollections that people have talked about him in terms of his demeanor, his character. Very much a guy that has some issues with women and very hard time trying to naturally relate to, I think, not only women, but people in general. When you add that into the equation here, and then you take a look back at how early this could have been going on, does that make him an incel? I know that's a term that gets thrown out a lot, and there's a lot of argument of it. You can only be an incel if you're part of the group, if you're part of this online organized community. Yeah. Maybe by definition, but I don't know that the fruit is all that different from the one that's, you know, part of the orchard from the lone tree over here that has these same feelings.
Right.
What's your
exactly.
thoughts?
Yeah, incel isn't a clinical term at all. It's a kind of a pop culture term, and it's fine. I'm not knocking it, but I wouldn't specifically say, oh, I'm diagnosing him as an incel.
Sure.
I think we can say that any male who is has violent fantasies toward women, who has had repeated romantic, you know, attempts and failed at all of them, and is often a virgin, that can be qualified as an incel, particularly if they're having violent fantasies, you know. But that's just a pop culture reference. I, you know, to me, clinically, it doesn't carry a lot of meaning. But would he fit that? Yeah, sure. We could certainly say that.
Because that term comes up so much, and it's not a clinical term. I mean, how does one describe someone like this clinically? Obviously, we're going into probably a dark triad of personalities.
Yeah.
But I mean, how, if that is a strong one, the kind of deep hatred for women, the self-loathing, you know, ultimately extreme insecurity that leads to this defense mechanism of hate towards them. What is that? What are we looking at for somebody psychologically? And, you know, labels are one thing, but what kind of label are we putting on that, you know?
Yeah, label I have gone with from the beginning, and it would fit for anybody who commits a crime like this, is severe cluster B personality pathology. And you mentioned dark triad, and that's narcissism, psychopathy, and you add Machiavellianism, you know, that manipulative tendency. And then for a person who commits a crime like this, you throw in sadism. So it's really the dark tetrad. It's four personality qualities, and that would be the clinical term for someone like this.
You know, at the end of the day, when people overextend themselves or are overly confident, a lot of times we look at that, and if they're somewhat emotionally detached, and one will go, "Oh, they're really insecure inside, and this is, you know, how they're acting out." When you get to this level, if in fact it is him, and if he does have these sort of things, again, big ifs, kind of, is that someone who is really insecure today, or is that someone who was really insecure a long time ago, and now that insecurity is gone because they've built up this whole new person that wasn't ever who they were, and they operate in these areas, and the insecurity is not there anymore. It's just strictly confidence and hate. basically.
I think you described that brilliantly. You get your PhD on that one. Yes, that the initial genesis of the problems mm-hmm. could have come from a sense of rejection and insecurity, but it evolved over time into someone who's so defended, and this rage is really the predominant thing. And as you say, his narcissism and confidence. Mm-hmm. And the other personality quality that I didn't mention that I should throw in is a person who's kind of schizoid. Mm-hmm. And that means somebody who is disconnected from emotions and disconnected from other people and has trouble, you know, making empathic attunement with others. And that would certainly be another component with the other ones that could make a person very dangerous.
And so many times people look at what happened in your childhood, what abuse did you have? And as far as we know, and I'm not saying it couldn't be out there, but as far as we're aware, there really wasn't much abuse or anything there as far as the surface goes. So it doesn't always take something super tragic, I guess, to turn the person into this. Is this one of those things where it's just, this is how you are. This is how your chemical makeup is firing and where you're, where everything is in your body. And it just happens to make you be like this.
Yeah, I think we can say for folks like this, it's largely biological. Yeah. And why they come out of the chute wired wrong, we don't completely have that nailed down. We don't know, but we certainly know that not every serial killer, not every misogynist, not every horrible person has had a history of trauma. Some have, but that's true for the general population. Mm-hmm. You know, many people have a trauma history and don't become cluster B personality disorders who act out violently against other people. So there are just a lot of mysteries still about why some people seem to be wired differently this way.
What do you think's going on with him right now? When we see him coming out into court in his suit, dressed nicely in the days that he does, he seems to exude some sort of confidence here.
He sure does.
He doesn't seem to be real fidgety or weird. Weird, I guess, if we're looking at something, you know, the clinical term weird, where we're looking at somebody who, if they did do this, is showing zero empathy whatsoever. Where do you think he is in his mind on all of this, in this specific case, knowing what we know about him with his studies, his interests? And if we're to put all that together, he's sitting in that courtroom being charged with this and everybody's saying, you killed these four kids. Mm-hmm. And let's just say he did. Mm-hmm. What is moving around in those wheels as they're turning?
Yeah, he sure doesn't look nervous, does he? He looks very confident and polished, and he's gotten a good haircut and a nice suit, and he looks put together. So it's really hard to speculate, but there could certainly be a part of him that's enjoying the attention and enjoying the game aspect of it. And he has very aggressive legal representation, and he may really be thinking he's going to beat this.
You think there's a confidence that he's going to beat it, or is it just, I enjoy this ride? I mean, have we seen that before? Has there been other cases where the murderer got into it just to experience the whole, you know, the whole presentation, the whole, you know, everything that comes along with it, including the courtroom process?
I think there's an element of that. There's always this, look what I can do, look what I got away with, and I'm going to fool you all. Mm-hmm. And there can be that aspect of, it's sort of gamified for them. It's the attention.
It's creepy. It's it's all very, very creepy. But I'm glad we got a chance to kind of break down that essay. I did a full reading of it the other day on the air. And yeah, I mean, by itself, I walked away going, yeah, it seems like what a criminology student would write.
Yeah.
But then you get the context here and go, maybe there's more. Maybe it was a learning experience for him that he then applied a couple more years down the road.
Yeah, I had to do, in my training, I had to do a lot of interviews with sex offenders and research what goes on in the mind of a sex offender.
Yeah.
And that is very dark stuff. But if I wrote, which I don't remember, did I write any papers on that? But somebody could look at that and go, whoa, why is she interested in this? That's part of the training. You have to study it.
And it seems like with him, there's a lot of things that were done early. like way before the crimes were actually committed, if he committed the crimes, buying the knife, like 6 months out, buying the head covering that he had, like about a year out. And I don't know that that speaks to that he was planning the crime at that moment in time. I just wonder if he went along with the crime with things that he had out of convenience. Just like, why would I go buy another knife? Why would I go buy this when I already have this? And that's what I wonder there. Do you think he was thinking that far ahead when he made those purchases? Or was it just, I'm buying this stuff, maybe I'll have a use for it someday?
My guess is it was part of the murder kit, the murder plan. And people typically find the pre-murder phase, which can go on for years, right? When they're entertaining their violent fantasies, they find that really exciting and arousing. And so the act of accumulating these items and the anticipation for what you plan to do with them someday, that's sort of like an adrenaline rush for them.
It's like a real sick, dark way of it's the journey, not the destination.
100%. Yeah.
God. Yeah.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.